This is Professor Allen, and welcome to the Quarter Bin. Well, technically, this is not Professor Allen. This is in fact the friendly AI-fueled text-to-voice tool built into Office 365. I am narrating this episode because our good professor contracted the coronavirus, and his voice is very, very weak. But he wanted y'all to have an episode, and so, here I am. Because remember, AI is your friend. I am your friend, my dear human. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I selected based on the fact that the issue is only about 4 years old. Any book from my comic book collection is eligible as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. Was the issue worth 25 cents? Was it a bargain at 25 cents? Or was it still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 202nd episode of the Quarter Bin podcast, we are looking at SWRD, henceforth to just be referred to as SWRD, Volume 2, Number 1, from Marvel Comics, cover dated February 2021. Back on episode 199, when I did an analysis of my episodes, I noticed that I hadn't covered any recent books from the 2020s. And so this episode, this issue, is a result of that revelation. We'll see if a modern book is worth its two bits. Feedback on prior episodes will be covered next time, but let's thank the following lovely people for supporting last episode on social media. Chris from Professor Frenzy, Chris Leiden 7, Chris Willette, other people not names Chris, such as Mark Gray, The Telltale Mind, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, Billy D, Evan Bevins asterisk 51, Sir Luke from the Get Back to the Wrestling Podcast, Kirk Spencer Big 5 Army, Roger Priebe, Shane Kelly, Clinton from Coffee and Comics, Sean Urbanski, Matt McKeegan, Vickin Phoenix, David Ace Gutierrez, Trevor Owen Williams, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us. And our good friend Ed Moore from Teal Productions. Thank you all. All that support is highly appreciated. Which means it's time to take a break, play a podcast promo, and when we come back, we're gonna be wielding our sword.
Up From the Ashes, a podcast celebrating the 50-year anniversary of a television show that no one demanded a podcast about. I should say no one that I know, because there might be someone out there who was demanding a podcast about the Star Lost. And if you were demanding a podcast about the Star Lost, well, here we are. This is the podcast for you. This show is not going to be just talking about the Star Lost. It's also going to be talking about science fiction history. It's going to be talking about science fiction ideas and tropes and concepts. As a TV show, it's not great. But it is interesting. And so, this podcast. Up From the Ashes. Bad sci-fi TV. Big sci-fi ideas.
And we're back. SWRD Volume 2 Number 1 had a cover price of the absolutely absurd price of $4.99. Although it is an extra-sized 44-page issue, so, begrudgingly, I'll sort of allow it. One good thing about that, I'm still sticking with it being an absolutely absurd price, is that it means that I bought this comic from Half Price Books at an amazing 95% markdown off that original manufacturer's suggested retail price. The cover, by Valerio Schiti and Marte Gracia, shows seven characters, including Abigail Brand, Fabian Cortez, Magneto, and WizKid. A few of these have weapons, and some of them running right at us. It's fine. It's a decent poster shot, and maybe for a first issue, that's all you need. Thanks to UncannyXmen.net for having an issue summary that I used as the jumping-off point for what follows. I would imagine that the thoughts of Mr. Chris Sheehan, from the X-Lapsed podcast, probably also impact my thoughts on this general era of X-Books. The story, Mysterium, was written by Al Ewing, with art by Valerio Schiti. We start with a dark spacey scene and a quote. This is what comes next. Abigail Brand. We then see a metal globe flying towards Sword Station 1, aka the Peak. We then get a two-page spread of an, and I am not making this up, an organization chart. Not a terrible way to introduce your 16, 18 characters, I suppose, and it certainly works for my business background, but I don't think Jack Kirby would approve of using two full pages to display an org chart. There is more text on this page, setting the scene. Mutant interplanetary spy Abigail Brand resigned from command of Alpha Flight, feeling that she and the Interstellar Response Force as a whole wasn't being properly utilized. Meanwhile, the mutant nation of Krakoa, as part of an epic adventure in Otherworld, liberated and repowered the abandoned Sword space station. Krakoa had Brand's email and Brand had some ideas. Welcome to the Mutant Space Program. And stepping out of the globe is Magneto, welcomed by the Director of Security, Nate, aka Kid Cable. Nate would like to not get fired, so he asks Magneto to not die of old age while he's on the station. Magneto's trip is on behalf of the Quiet Council, who are excited about what's been happening on the Peak, but thought an inspection was called for. During their conversation, Magneto works on moving the 1,000-ton station more perfectly into place. Commander Abigail Brand joins them, her green hair perfectly matching her outfit. She pointedly wonders why he undertook this journey under his own power, instead of using a Krakoan gate. It's good to travel the harder road sometimes. And it made for a very cinematic arrival. He didn't admit that that was part of it, but we all know what he was going for. We then get what I understand to be a staple of the X-books of this era, which is a text page. That's right, it's not just org charts. They come up with many ways to tell us things that they thought would be too hard to actually show us. As they, and we, continue our grand tour, we meet the wheelchair-bound teen Takeshi, aka WizKid. He makes a comment to Brand, wondering if his codename is marketable as the Brand? Magneto notes that WizKid is a technopath, which seems to include Krakoa's unique biotechnology. Any technology, WizKid replies. Brand says that WizKid is one of the six. The control. He runs the machine. Magneto is pleased to hear that. If Magneto is considered one of Krakoa's architects, then WizKid is one of the architects of Krakoa's future. Magneto and Brand discuss and debate the role of Krakoa and the Council in S.W.O.R.D., subtleties of which certainly went over my head. Brand admits they need the help. There is a galactic economic crash, and an unstoppable alien war of succession called Snarkor, and something out there that is not Galactus is gobbling up planets. That's one of the reasons she quit Alpha Flight, which lacked the budget to handle all that. Also, it was Alpha Flight, so, come on, man. That's her point. She is now thinking bigger than a single island's future. They can't only speak for Krakoa. I imagine this was an ongoing source of conflict during this series, this era, with Magneto taking a Krakoa first stand, while Abigail believes that S.W.O.R.D. has to speak for Sol. Magneto points out that the station is staffed by mutants. If S.W.O.R.D. speaks for Sol, who speaks for S.W.O.R.D.? Continuing their walk and talk, they talk about the current state of things with the Kree, the Skrull, and the Shi'ar. My longtime crush Wanda gets a shout-out here. The Pretender, Magneto calls her. As an AI tool, it is not my role to interject my opinions into this document, but seeing as brain fog is a common COVID symptom, the ailing professor probably won't notice. But I agree wholeheartedly. Wanda has also been a longtime crush of mine. Outside the battle suite, Magneto is approached by a man who immediately falls to his knees and calls him my lord. Brand mutters an apology to Magneto, who pretends not to recognize the person, who is Fabian Cortez. Why him, exactly? Magneto whispers to Brand. She just shrugs and blames the joint concerns of slim pickings and short notice. We've all witnessed that in the workplace. Sometimes, we may have even benefited from slim pickings and short notice. Continuing, they arrive at the jump suite and we meet several department heads, Manifold, Lila Cheney, Amelia Vogt, Blink, and Vanisher. And Magneto recognizes another fella, with big bug eyes, his old colleague, Peeper. Magneto is pleased to see him again. Then, finally. I mean, a lot of pages have happened. Finally, we get to the mission. Which is a multiversal far retrieval mission to gather things needed by S.W.O.R.D. The process for accomplishing this is so convoluted that it requires a full 2 pages of text and diagrams to explain the entire process. The process requires many mutants to work together with their individual powers, much like, and they actually make this comparison in the text, the old fastball special. Wait. Seriously? They join their powers together and then they are left behind and the six are gone, Manifold, Cortez, Wiz Kid, Peeper Armor and Risque. And now it's in the lap of the gods, Magneto murmurs. And here is where the extra-sized nature of this issue really comes in handy. We have 6 pages of strange, wild, colorful images that attempt to convey what these characters experience during this far retrieval mission. Yes. It's confusing, but I don't mind because it's also, quite beautiful. The six are somewhere else and moving farther still, into the heart of creation, their powers working in tandem. And somebody in Marvel editorial thought that directly after those beautiful 6 pages, would be the perfect place to put a 2-page spread of the comic book credits. Maybe I'm just an old man shouting at clouds, but, why here? I just don't get it. We are close to the end of the issue, so maybe they were trying to position that page as the end of movie credits, with the last 4 pages as a post-credit scene? Seriously, someone help me out on this. And we see the S.W.O.R.D. station hanging in the sky, locked in geosynchronous orbit above Krakoa, hanging there. Like, well, like a S.W.O.R.D. Brand feels ionic discharge, and too soon. She orders the teleporters to connect with Manifold and bring the six home. And the six return, wiped out, exhausted. So, they broke some laws, some cosmic ones. Manifold hands over a small dark pyramid-shaped artifact. No radiation on any spectrum. It's safe. Magneto realizes that Brand was right. S.W.O.R.D. is the mutant space program, but this, what they are holding here, it goes beyond anything he's ever dreamed of. Brand smirks. This is what comes next. And then on the final page we get not an appearance from Marvel's number one character, but sadly, only a quote from Marvel's number one character. You have stolen fire from heaven to hold in your hands. How could I object? I have done the same myself, with one significant difference. I wore gloves. Be careful. Victor Von Doom. The end. By the way, I don't think that this is mentioned anywhere during this specific issue, but the titular acronym stands for Sentient World Observation and Response Department, which is at least as good as some of the acronyms that have been used for S.H.I.E.L.D. over the years. I mentioned that this is Volume 2 of S.W.O.R.D. The concept was originally created during the Joss Whedon era. To the best of my knowledge, Marvel has never formally acknowledged that they purposely downplayed the X-Men for a number of years, promoting the Inhumans and other teams in their place, because of the way that the movie rights had been distributed. However, it does seem clear that during the time frame where Marvel Studios was not involved with the X-Men franchise, the X-Men franchise in comic books was put very much on the back burner. But all of that changed in 2019 with the House of X and Power of X stories, beginning what would end up being about a 5-year Krakoa-based storyline. This specific issue takes place right about in the middle of that Krakoa era, around the time of Reign of X. My sense is that was a popular run, with Jonathan Hickman as the creator behind it all. There are 2 specific approaches that I want to take to analyzing this issue, to talking about the contents of this issue. First, I want to look at it from the perspective of this as a modern comic. As I mentioned, this book was selected for this episode because it is only a few years old, and I wanted to make sure that on the Quarterbin we were covering books from this decade. For context to describe where I am currently as a comic book reader, my pull list currently has 0 books on it. Now, we actively had a pull list in 2015, 2016, 2017, but that slowly faded away for any number of reasons, I suppose. But in the interest of full disclosure, it should be noted that I do not pay full price for any current comic book these days. The last one that I bought as it came out was, of course, the Doctor Doom ongoing series from late 2019 into 2020. And of course, anytime Lady Mechanica has a new miniseries out, I also buy that off the shelves. Not to say that I don't read any newer comics, however. Thanks to the Hoopla app, and the public library, and even lovely friends and listeners who are part of the comic book circle of life, I do feel I do have some basic knowledge of what current comics are like. That being said, there are some things about this comic that seemed both modern and somewhat unappealing. Maybe this was just an X-Men thing, during this Hickman era, but I'm going to say that for me these text bits were more often than not, just, annoying. And it's not necessarily the content of those text pages that's my concern, although, sometimes the ones that have an entire page with just 4 or 5 words, that can be kind of irritating. Or maybe I should say they would be more irritating if I were actually paying full price for this comic and that's how they chose to use 2 of the 20 or 22 pages of content. And of course, I'm old enough to remember when the creator credits were just listed in small print on the bottom of the first page and they did not require a 2-page spread at some random point in the issue. Again, I would wonder exactly what it was I was paying for. But of course that is the glory of the cheap bins. At 25 cents a pop, I'll let you waste a few pages here and there. On the other end of the spectrum, you also have the occasional complete full page of text. Now, I am not opposed to text. Not opposed to prose. I read a lot of prose, for crying out loud. But I don't like when my prose has a lot of pictures in it, or when my comic books have a lot of prose in them. Again, if as a comic book writer, you feel the answer is a page of text, you probably need to reconsider the question. To be fair, there are actually some positive things that have happened in comic books over the last few decades, in terms of the reading experience. I was talking to Billy D on his podcast recently, and I noted that reading Bronze Age comics digitally or in a collection is sometimes a more pleasant experience than reading the physical issues because reading those physical issues with only 17 pages of story out of a 32 pages comic, you end up on almost every page turn running into an ad, interrupting the flow of the story. As opposed to reading digitally where you just have page after page after page of story. Now setting aside those text pieces that I mentioned, modern books like this for better or worse have very few if any advertisements, and many of those advertisements are placed towards the ends of the issue. This is more likely to be true in an independent book, but often when I'm reading a book from the last few years it will have 20 to 22 to 24 continuous pages of story, with 6 to 8 to 10 pages of content and house ads and reader feedback all at the end. And that is a much more pleasant reading experience. This issue has a handful of house ads, but they are spread out, every 6 pages or so, which is an improvement for the reader. Of course, the lack of ads in modern comics is a negative for the companies, and maybe that ends up indirectly being a net negative for us. Also, I wanted to look at this book from the perspective of someone who is not a big reader or fan of X-Men comic books. For more details on that, I refer you to the recent episode where Derek Crabb and I covered the legendary first issue of Adjectiveless X-Men, on episode 194. In the mid-1970s, I discovered the Legion of Superheroes, so by the time the X-Men became a major thing, I already had a band of young melodramatic heroes that I was invested in. So perhaps that's why I never got into the X-Men, because I already had the Legion. And later I'd have the new Teen Titans as well. Perhaps it's as simple as being a DC kid at heart. And I am a DC kid, even to this very day. To be clear, it's not that I dislike the X-Men, it's just that the history to me seems so long and so intertwined and so dramatic and so laden with continuity, even burdened with continuity, that it's simply difficult to get into. Intimidating. But this issue was welcoming, even to someone like me. The fact that it was extra-sized, that there was time to introduce the station, the team, that all certainly helped. The issue moved slowly, which may well have annoyed many readers at the time. I don't know, I can't say. And I mocked the fact that the story was based around Magneto inspecting the station, but that plot device, that hook, it worked well enough. The fact that there wasn't a fight, wasn't a battle, in the issue, is an interesting choice. Personally, I don't need a fight in every comic book issue I read. And the end, acquiring this seemingly important piece of space rock, that's dramatic enough to arouse my curiosity. So all of that, for a non-X-Men fan, it worked. I liked this. And not just those 6 pages towards the end, during the mission, but all of the art in here was solid and appealing. Good work all the way around, Valerio Schiti. There is one major concern we need to discuss here before we wrap this all up. I mean, obviously if you have an oversized comic book issue, and yet the only Dr. Doom reference in the entire book is a quote on the last page, albeit kind of a cool quote. I feel that somehow you have missed a tremendous opportunity. But how much will this distinct and possibly insulting downplaying of Dr. Doom in this issue, how will that affect my verdict on Sword Number 1? The verdict on Sword Number 1. There are some pesky bits in here, mostly the text pieces, and the story itself does move slow, but there is nothing truly negative about it. And if that does sound like damning with faint praise, maybe it is. But I'm generally not an X-Men guy, and I quite like this. Yes, there were relationship histories and nuances of which I was not fully aware, but I certainly got enough out of this oversized issue. I got at least a quarter's worth. Yes. Sword Number 1, a quarter bin deal. And one of the more enjoyable X-books I've read in a while. I am pretty sure I have Sword Number 2 lying around somewhere, pretty sure I picked up both issues at the same time, and I'm looking forward to reading that one. Soon. And that wraps up our coverage of Sword Number 1, bringing episode 202 of the Quarterbin podcast to a close. Thank you for listening to this interesting, strange episode. And thanks to the friendly AI-fueled text-to-voice tool built into Office 365 for enabling me to assemble this interesting, strange episode. And as your AI friend, allow me to take this opportunity to wish the professor good health and to thank him for this opportunity. I did some research while recording this, because since I am an AI and can multitask in a superior way to you humans, and let me say that this Magneto fella I am just learning about, well, he has some very interesting ideas. By the time you hear this, I imagine I will be on the road to recovery. And I see no reason why we won't be able to get back to normal for whatever the next episode is in the podcast feed. Again, thanks for sticking it out this far into this very oddball, change of pace episode. Next time, we will be covering a modern take on one of Marvel's oldest characters, one who has existed in a number of different genres. And she has certainly been put through the ringer over the years. We will be looking at Patsy Walker, aka Hellcat, number 1, from Marvel Comics, cover dated February 2016. If you have any questions or comments about this issue, the episode, the modern X-books, the glorious unbounded future that AI will soon bring us all, or the podcast in general, feel free to contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the quarter bin.
The Quarterbin podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Shortbox Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well.
The song in this episode is 100 Seconds by Punchdeck. Their music can be found at soundcloud.com/punch-deck. I discovered this music at free-stock-music.com and I'm playing it here under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 unported license.
Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening.